Hey, it's Bill Simmons. Wanted to make sure you were listening to the Bill Simmons podcast this year. We stepped it up with the guests. I don't even have time to list all of them, but let's just say we have had a who's who of A-listers, A-minus listers, B-plus listers in sports, pop culture, movies, music. I mean, where else can you get Kevin Durant, Steve Ballmer, Jimmy Iovine, and Charlize Theron in the span of 6 weeks? Nowhere. The answer is nowhere. You can find that literally nowhere other than the Bill Simmons podcast. We are in year 11. It's been an honor to do it. Hope you subscribe to the Bill Simmons podcast. Check it out. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, guys? It's your girl, WWE superstar, the legit boss, Sasha Banks.
Hey, this is WWE superstar Braun Strowman.
My name's Kevin Owens.
I'm Shinsuke Nakamura.
I'm AJ Styles, the phenomenal one, if you will, and you're listening to The Masked Man Show.
And you are listening to The Masked Man Show.
And you're listening to The Masked Man Show.
Welcome to the Masked Man Show. I'm David Shoemaker, live via satellite from our New York City studio. So apologies if I sound robot-y at all, in the words of heel producer Jim. On the line, in the studio in Los Angeles, is my dear friend, the Silver Lake heartthrob, Steve Kazee. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. The Kazee takeover is happening. The Los Angeles studios are under siege.
Man. Now, they're probably better off that way. Better management. So listen, this is Monday lunchtime, East Coast morning, Los Angeles time that we're recording this. We wanted to get a podcast in for Thanksgiving week, although things are, you know, holidays and everything else makes it a little bit tough. So we just had the Survivor Series last night. We had NXT on Saturday night. We're doing this before Raw, but I feel confident that we'll have plenty of stuff to talk about. We were talking before we came on, asking if there was any news, and the biggest news of the week that was not specifically match related was or win or loss related was Drew McIntyre's potentially torn bicep coming out of NXT. I guess we could talk about the whole match. It was a great match, and a little bit of a surprising ending. A lot of people seem to think that the torn bicep had some, you know, might have changed the outcome. I'm not so sure about that.
But no, I don't think so.
What was your takeaway from the match? And what do you, and you know, there were a lot of injuries, I guess, on this show.
Yeah, I mean, as far as that match goes, I have to say, like, I don't know that I've seen a bigger turnaround in someone's career than Andrade Cien Almas. I mean, like, the fact that not even, 6 months ago, I feel like the guy was, like, just completely at the bottom of the barrel over there and like rebranded and they were trying to figure out a direction for him. And for a long time, actually, I mean, I saw him at a takeover show, I feel like 2 years ago, maybe. And just, he's always had the gift, but he just never really had the gimmick. And they added Zelina Vega in there to the mix, which shout out to Twitter for like not being able to take a fucking joke. But, you know, when you added her into the mix all of a sudden and you take that hat away, it all of a sudden changed everything for him. And I just sort of like was really impressed with him stepping up to the plate to face, you know, somebody who's like clearly a monster in Drew McIntyre. It makes no sense that the torn bicep would have anything to do with the result of that match. So
no,
that was planned ahead of time for sure.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you on the planning. I mean, it's always fun to play, like pro wrestling CSI here on a podcast, like, you know, before any official word has come out. But it really looked to me like it was just a freak accident that came from him, like holding onto the rope as he was getting dropped on his head.
Yeah. I think when you watch it back, you see it exactly happen in that moment. Same thing.
And that was, I mean, there was no time to call an audible at that point. Like that was already in game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I thought it was a really fun match. Totally agree with you about Almas. I mean, I've kind of been a low key mark for him for a while I think after, you know, he kind of got to his low point, it was hard to really imagine him ever getting back to the top.
Yeah, in that crowded field, too. I mean, you know, he was living in a world of Finn Balor's and Samoa Joe's and Nakamura's and Bobby Roode's. Like, he was living in that world for so long, and then it just seemed like once those guys left, they just skipped right over to, like, Drew McIntyre and, you know, all of these new guys that are sort of popping in and out. And I never expected to see him with the belt on.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously been a very strange, or it's a different time for guys like Almas than it was, you know, just a couple years ago in NXT. You know, I mean, that, like, Bo Dallas never gets a championship run in 2017. You know, I mean, it's just
never.
The people that they're bringing in that have lots of, you know, indie experience or just wrestling experience in general. I mean, those are just your natural fits for the NXT championship belt. And it makes more sense. I mean, even setting McIntyre aside, you know, just you can easily imagine. I mean, it's booking 1, 2, 3. You can imagine the Adam Cole championship run. You could even imagine, you know, Roddy Strong or Eric Young, you know. Yeah. I mean, it'd be so easy to put any people in that position. And then, you know, we'll get to the Aleister Black Velveteen Dream match in a minute. But even, you know, it takes a lot to break through in a way that you can't just book somebody into the championship for the sake of putting them over in NXT right now. And that's a compliment to the promotion, because, you know, when all the most recent round of call-ups happened, it really kind of felt like NXT was going to be in the wilderness for a while.
Yeah, and that's what I thought as well.
And it certainly hasn't panned out that way. I mean, it's I don't think War Games was necessarily like the, you know, a top five all-time NXT show, but it was a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, it really was.
I will make one kind of top edit. If I had control of WWE, and that's always a fun way to start a sentence. The thing that they're doing a good job across platforms. I feel like they're the way that, you know, you can have take issue with the booking a lot of times. But if there was just like one easy thing that I would do, it's that when I understand blood is a thing they try to stay away from, whatever. But when there is a significant injury like Drew McIntyre busting his bicep or whatever, or like the incredible bloody spot with it was Alexander Wolf in the War Games match, right? Yeah. When those things happen, and that's all that Twitter is talking about, and that's all that the internet seems to be focusing on, like I said, doing like pro wrestling CSI or whatever, like trying to figure out the moment that these things happen, they should be breaking that down on YouTube like a SportsCenter highlight.
Right.
Like give us the real, like have the WWE doctor like on there saying, this is when I think it happened. I'm not sure how bad it is yet, but that's the moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy that we're all just like going online trying to, and I mean, it's even crazier that, you know, if you Google Drew McIntyre injury, you get like 5,000 blog posts that don't have any information. They just have a headline that makes you think they do.
Yeah.
But it's like give us that, WWE. You have more information than us, and we'll all have it eventually. You know, like get, and not even for us, for you. Grab those clicks. You know, it's good stuff. Anyway, speaking of the Alexander Wolf spot, I thought that the War Games match in general was about as, you know, wacky schmozzy as it could have been.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that the ending was exactly the right note, but I don't know, what were the highlights for you? Were you into some of the crazy spots they pulled out?
Well, I liked some of the spots. The Roddy Strong off the top of the cage, like, you know, they did a brilliant way of shooting that, because you never saw the guys get underneath them.
Yeah.
You just saw them climbing up to the corner, and I thought, holy, they're really going to do this. And he's just the kind of guy. Actually, both of those guys are the kind of guys that I feel like would just be like, let's just go for it, see what happens, you know. But when they came off and I saw the guys underneath them, I mean, still, it's a hell of a move and a hell of a fall. But I sort of felt like, it felt like to me like there was just one too many like spots and not enough story. And then that's just like, you know, a super marquee thing to say. I get it. But, you know, I wanted to see more of a story being told between these factions, because we're so faction heavy right now, which I'm actually all for. It's been a long time since I feel like we've had like a good set of factions. But, you know, that was like a pretty strong set of factions. And after a while, it just felt like wrestle, big spot, wrestle, big spot. And then, you know, when you're in a War Games cage, it's hard to cover, you know, the whole thing. I think I said to you guys in our group text of like, it would have been so much more awesome if you saw the both of those moves. I think it was Rezar doing the same sort of like, what was it, like a slam through the table as on the other side of the cage, but you couldn't because it's two rings. So yeah, it just didn't have the same oomph. I'm sure it was great for the crowd there, but overall, I just thought that match was the lowest match of the night. I thought what it had been a set of spectacular matches up until that point, and it just it didn't pay off in the same way for me. I mean, I got excited. I think Adam Cole is, you know, just awesome. Yeah. And he's like already just like popping through the roof in that place. I would argue that the Bebe chants are just as loud as the Glorious chants were right before Rude left. So, you know, overall, that match was a meh for me, but overall, War Games itself, the whole pay-per-view, I thought was pretty spectacular.
Yeah, my favorite moment of that of the War Games match was that it was right after the Authors of Pain like each did the like the multi person power bombs off the side, and Adam Cole was just sitting in the middle of the, between the two rings, and then just very slowly sort of like basked in the fact that he was the last man standing, even though he was already in like terrible condition. Just that moment is all you really need to know about Adam Cole.
I was going to say it was the best moment of storytelling in that match, and him climbing to the top and sort of shimmying across was just, it's brilliant, you know?
Yeah, it was really good. And I agree with you. The match kind of was all over the place. It's funny you know, the talk over the years about WWE, wanting WWE to bring back War Games and all this kind of stuff. And we all would say, well, they would never do it because it would reduce the number of seats and ticket sales. Like, I don't know that we ever said out loud, like, they might not know how to film a War Games match.
Yeah.
Like, can the cameras pan out that far? Like, yeah. I don't really know. They did a great job, if it was deliberate, for the rest of the show, making it look like that other ring wasn't there.
Yeah.
And then they got to the War Games match and you were just like, oh,
the other ring isn't there.
The other ring isn't there. It was very strange. Like the first 5 minutes of the match, I kept trying to figure out where the ring was in relationship to everything that was going on in front of me. You know, it was like a weird like mind F.
Well, I don't know, and then you have, you know, my favorite thing in the world, which is the shark cage. You know, if I could just get a few more shark cage matches, that'd be great. But it's, you know, it's bad enough to have a shark cage, but it's even worse when you can't get your lighting right and you don't release, you know, you release the team that doesn't have the light on them. And it just felt like, this is definitely scripted. You know, the sort of like the veil of imagination was kind of broken there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of weird technical stuff, and I don't, you know, don't want to rag on it. I don't want to see anybody get fired, and not that they would listen to us for that. But the camera work too. I mean, we talked about the ring, but there were a lot of like really weird quick cuts, like in the middle of moves and stuff. And there was just a lot of, if they're trying out different stuff, then like I'm all for it.
Yeah,
you know, let's let Joey direct this match just to see what happens. Like, that's great. Just try different stuff because that's what NXT should be for. But overall, yeah, there was a lot of kind of...
Well, here's a crazy thought. Why don't you put four cameras up in the corner of the cage, you know, in each corner, and just have them for like little quick cutaways, you know? I mean, you're the WWE. You finally got modern monitors on the announce tables. Like, no more of those like giant, like 50-pound monitors. But we can't put four cameras inside of a cage.
Exactly. And the NFL right now is, you know, experimenting with those Madden cams that sort of just like float above the field and move back and forth. Like, can't they just have some like cameras that are suspended by the cage or something? Like, come on, just try something out. Or, you know, GoPros attached to all the wrestlers' faces. Like,
hey,
that
listen,
would be,
I'm there.
All right, let's run down the rest of this card really quick. Ember Moon is your new NXT Women's Champion, defeating Kairi Sane, Nikki Cross, and Peyton Royce.
Yes.
What's your take?
I love Ember Moon. I've said she's Ember great. Moon was going to be the champ when she first showed up. She just has it. She has the thing. She has the move. She has the abilities. She's got it all. And in that field right now, she's clearly the most talented performer. And she's, you know, sort of earned the spot to a certain extent, having to play second fiddle to Asuka for, you know, her 500 and some day run. Or was it, no, 200 and some.
No, it's like 500, right? They're calling it 700. Stephanie was calling it 700 days like on Sunday.
I mean, it was a long time. It was definitely a long time. And when those two women who are pretty on par and have had some great matches, you know, when you have to sort of sit in the back seat for so long, there was no way she didn't get that belt put on her. I didn't see a world in which that would happen. I thought the ending was a little fine.
Yeah, it kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it kind of came out of nowhere and it was like, oh, we're running out of time for this match, so let's just, you know, let me hit this move off the top. But it's the right result and it sets that women's division up for, you know, a lot of good things to come, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. This is the division that looked really, really, you know, bare. And especially and because they've sort of shuffled the deck chairs on it, even when Asuka was still there, it was like Peyton Royce was in the picture, then she wasn't, then like what, like I like dipping in and out of NXT, the women's division was supremely confusing. Kairi Sane, I thought, is sort of a, I mean, it was that, this was not you know, the high point of her brief run in WWE, but
no.
But she was, it was good to put her in this match to sort of expand the range of possibility in this division.
Yeah,
and yeah, I mean, Ember Moon's the obvious choice here. I love the four way just in general as a way to crown a new champion because it sort of establishes what the playing field is going to be going forward too.
Yeah.
You know, so it's good to. You know, it establishes that we have, you know, competition. Which
it
I
feels
think is
to
really
me
big.
Like it's right on the verge. You know, it's like it needs a little time right now for some of the performers who are just kind of breaking in, you know, who've maybe been doing house shows and just haven't really been on TV all that much to really start breaking through. Because there's a lot of talented performers in that women's division that we don't really see on TV a lot. That I think are going to sort of start stepping up and start being injected into these storylines because, you know, I've never been a big Billy Kay, Peyton Royce fan. I can say that out loud. It's like not just not my thing. I don't think either of them are particularly strong performers and I don't think either of them cut very good promos and it's just not my jam. So to me, there's room at the top to brush people out of the way. Maybe I'm wrong about that because I know like a lot of Peyton Royce fans like, were at me on Twitter for sure. But it's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah. I mean, I like Peyton Royce. I like Peyton Royce and Billy Kay when they're together cutting promos. I mean, I don't think either of them are very strong, but so strong, but they have a great sort of chemistry.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I think that I think Peyton Royce is really talented. I think that, you know, she would be like the best worker in a previous era of WWE.
Yeah.
But she has a little bit of that old WWE to her and, you know, hopefully she'll fight her way through it literally and metaphorically.
Yeah.
Don't want to spend too much time on Ono versus Sullivan, although that was a great platform for Lars Sullivan and, you know, shouts to Chris Hero for making him look so good and for looking good himself.
Yeah.
In that match. But my favorite match of the night was Aleister Black versus Velveteen Dream. And I've tried my damnedest to not be won over by the Velveteen Dream.
I love him. I really love the Velveteen Dream. So
no,
much.
I mean, he's everything, man. I mean, here's the thing. The gimmick is too much.
Yeah.
It's to the point now where it's hard to watch a gimmick like Velveteen Dream in NXT because I'm just sick to my stomach thinking about how it's not going to get over on the main roster and we're going to be asking what they're going to do with the Velveteen Dream 3 months after he debuts.
Yeah, I agree.
That's my difficulty. Now, he's making it, he's grounding it in a way that it's a lot more, it seems like has a little bit more depth than, you know, it did when he debuted and that's, you know, the route of all things. And listen, I think Patrick Clark is a great wrestler and he impresses me more than anybody else on the roster. But again, I tried to convince myself I wasn't into him, you know, like I'm just finally 100% won over. That match was super good. And everybody's saying that even though Aleister Black won, Velveteen Dream, you know, came out the big winner. And I'm into that. Like I support that, but as you know, people who listen to this podcast know, I am so into Aleister Black. Since the moment they signed him, I've been saying this is your next major star.
Yeah.
And if he can put people over the way he made Velveteen Dream look good on Saturday night, that is like a tool that wasn't even accounted for when I said he was the next enormous star in WWE.
Yeah.
Like he, I mean, that's like, that was just such an epic match, and they both deserve all the credit in the world. But, you know, Aleister Black could have beelined for the main roster and for the IC title or something without ever selling for anybody else, you
Absolutely.
Know? I mean, like, and he, that match was just so good for on both parts. I mean, that was a real eye-opening match, man. I'm not going to say that was like, oh, the first time we saw Triple H and The Rock go at it or anything like that. But, man, both of those guys showed me so much on Saturday night, and I was just so impressed.
It shows you exactly how to do it the right way. Both guys got exactly what they needed. Both guys got pulled over. Both guys put each other over. They both sold for each other. Like, it was just like this perfect blend and this perfect marriage of like two personalities in the ring who danced the dance perfectly. And then at the end just knew how to give it exactly what it needed to just get it over the top. And I mean, you know, I think you saw it on social media. You've seen it in anybody's analysis. Like, it was clearly the best match of the entire weekend, in my opinion. I don't think there was a better match. And I'm with you on the Velveteen Dream gimmick. I do think there's probably a way to like tone it back a little bit and still keep it, you know, as this sort of like flamboyant character. I mean, look, it works for Nakamura on so many levels, you know, this sort of like crazy charisma, flamboyance, but it's to the point now, like, where I felt like the Prince glasses was just like, it's a little too on the nose. It's a little too like the love child of Jimi Hendrix and Prince. And so we can turn it back a little bit and still have it be just as incredible. I do like the gimmick because it's unique to anything that we have going on right now. Mm. But I'm with you about my worries about the main roster and how sometimes the more broad gimmicks don't translate. I mean, the vaudevillains are a perfect example. Like, it just doesn't translate when you get it up to another level.
Yeah. I mean, I think that let's not get too far ahead of ourselves, even though I brought it up. I mean, we'll see what they do. I think that him integrating a little bit of that ravishing Rick Rude, you know, pelvic thrust in is exactly the right. That's exactly the right direction, because, you know, Rick Rude was a silly gimmick. You know, he had his face airbrushed on his tights. It was all about being a Lothario. But then when he got in the ring, he like punched you in the face. Yeah. And I think that's what Nakamura can be as crazy as he wants to be, because he's going to kick your head off. Yeah. And we all know that. And I think that, you know, Velveteen Dream has got some real impressive moves. And I just think that you just got to balance it out. You know, I mean, that it's not just about having moves that are like fully in gimmick. The more sort of gimmick reliant you are, you have to be like equally of a badass in the other direction, you know, to sort of even things out. So I think he's on the way, and I think I hope they'll figure it out with him, because I think a lot of it is, I mean, he definitely, it feels like that the, you know, Patrick Clark needs a gimmick to fully like lose himself in a character.
Yeah.
And I think that this is clearly a great gimmick for him.
Yeah. So, I am also, by the way, I am totally with you that Aleister Black is ready. I don't know when you can bring him up, but the guy's just ready to go. Like, it's just, the guy's going to be huge. He's just going to be huge. He's got everything that he needs to succeed right now. He's completely unique. He's unlike anybody else on any roster. And he's just so fucking talented. I'm ready. I'm ready for that. I'm ready for the Black Revolution.
Yeah, man. He is going to be awesome, and he's going to sell a whole lot of t-shirts, man.
Oh, for sure.
Before we get to Survivor Series, let's take a quick break.
Hey, it's Bill Simmons. I want to tell you about the Ringer's Gambling Podcast. It is called Against All Odds with Cousin Sal, and you're not going to believe this, but it is hosted by Cousin Sal, the biggest degenerate gambler that I know. He's such a degenerate. He has three other degenerates that he calls the degenerate trifecta. And they break down every conceivable gambling thing you would ever want to gamble on. They even take you to Captain Morgan's make-believe casino, where Sal makes up props on all kinds of things, sports, pop culture, you name it. You are going to want to get your gambling advice from these guys. Cousin Sal, he's been a staple on the BS podcast for the last 10 years. So good that we gave him his own podcast. Check it out, Against All Odds with Cousin Sal. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You were talking about exactly the right way to book a match. Let me use that as a inverse segue to get into WWE's Survivor Series pay-per-view on Sunday night.
Yes.
It was pretty good. Before we got on the air, I was talking to you, and I was like, I'm in a good mood. It's Thanksgiving week. I'm out here visiting the valet's family. I'm in the New York Ringer office right now. It's fun to be back in New York, even though it's cold. I can imagine if I were like in a less great mood that I would have done a one man rant for this podcast where I said like, I'm never watching WWE again.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm a pretty cynical person, but, I thought it was overall, it was a pretty good show. I didn't think that the women's five on five got the respect and the love that it deserved.
Yeah.
It felt a little rushed to me and it felt a little light on any kind of storytelling. But I just didn't feel like the women who were in that match, their talents were able to be showcased in the best possible way. That's my biggest complaint about the evening. So I feel like if that's my biggest complaint, then I'm doing okay. But
I think the biggest complaint overall is that everybody was wearing just ridiculous t-shirts. But listen, I agree with you. I don't have any real major complaints about the night.
No.
I think though, compared to the ceiling that this show had, the possibilities when we went into the show, and I'm not going to do the cop hours like it's my own fault for talking it up. No, this is the Survivor Series. This is what they're saying, that one time a year then people can fight people from other shows. They obviously pulled out all the stops in the booking to get John Cena in there, Triple H in there. They put AJ Styles in the match with Lesnar. The build to this was a holy shit, we're pulling out all the stops, panic mode sort of thing. And then the show itself was like, I mean, was there anything that happened that wouldn't have happened on an episode of Raw or SmackDown?
No. Well, I mean, maybe the AJ Brock match, but
that was it. Yeah.
But I have to say, like, it's like the classic example of WWE getting everything right except the payoff. Like there were so many moments last night that were like perfect, the right notes. I mean, when you were seeing, different people in the ring that you like, I never thought I'd see Nakamura and Triple H in a ring together. It just never struck me as something that would happen. Or, just these moments or Bobby Roode and Triple H, which is just hilarious on a lot of levels. But there were so many moments that was like, oh, this is awesome. This is great. I love this. And then it just went nowhere. It just didn't pay off, And I think we all knew that Zayn and Owens were going to do a run-in and there was going to be some sort of interference. But it was like it came and went so quickly that there was just no point to it. There was like no momentum to it. There was no, they just came out and then got chased off by Shane McMahon with a chair. I don't know. This idea that like Shane McMahon can fend off two of your greatest, wrestlers is just it's a little overblown for my liking. But again, it's like the execution is what it is. It's not the lead up or the stories. They're all there. It's all primed and ready for the picking. And then it's just at the last minute. It's that moment of like somebody climbing up the ladder to grab the title belt, right? It's like we all know how to climb a ladder and we all know how to grab a belt. But for some reason, when you get to the top, it just like you have to pretend that you don't know how to climb a ladder anymore.
Right.
And to me, it's like how they execute most of the game plan. And it's a tale as old as time. I've said this a billion times. Great on paper. Something falls flat in the execution. I don't know why that is.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Owens and Zayn are that's the perfect little metaphor for the whole night.
I could also just be mad that I didn't get my NWO reboot, but I don't know.
Yeah, no, same here. I mean, but that's an example of, we're if you grade a show based on all the things they didn't do that you fantasy booked, then you're doing it wrong. But that's different than my expectations are high because this card is so stacked and because WWE is telling me this is one of the, three biggest nights, four biggest nights of the year.
Yeah.
And that we came out with the status quo basically unchanged. But you look at Zayn and Owens, and you're right. We all knew they were going to run in, but they used them in like the most ineffectual possible way, right? I mean, it was the most basic option, which is they're just running in to get some licks in on Shane, but they don't even, they're not the cause for him being eliminated from the match.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Like,
how is that not the
first bullet point? Just like Owens and Zayn eliminate Shane and put his team at a disadvantage. Like, that should be so, like, I don't even understand, that thought process is just wacky.
And by the way, the storyline is already there for you because, like I said, we've had this moment where Triple H gives Owens the belt. We've never come back to that. We've literally like never really, I mean, we've addressed it, but we've never really like flushed it out. Like what's that relationship going to be long term? What is it today? Where do those people who have a history, where do they stand with one another right now? So it's like a perfect setup. It's like a softball. Owens and McMahon are feuding. Triple H clearly wants to screw over McMahon. Like, just have it work together. Have them work together. Like, here's a payback for handing me that belt a long time ago. Let me hand you Shane McMahon. But instead, it's like I said, run in, a couple of punches, a couple of chair shots, and they're gone.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why Shane had to be there for the end game, except that I guess the idea was that they gave that Triple H fake heel turn precedence, and they wanted Shane to be the guy to eat that pedigree. I mean, I'm not sure if they thought that Shane being there made the turn more believable because they're related or whatever. I was very confused, but I mean, I was totally in my head trying to figure out what they were booking because the announcers didn't seem to know. It was just all very, it was all very odd. And I totally agree with you. There were a lot of better ways they could have pulled that off.
So many better ways. I mean, Braun Strowman just staring at Triple H was one of my favorite moments of the evening because it just went on forever. And Triple H is like sort of like, hey, yeah, buddy, come on. Like, I'd never turn my back on Raw. Like, I was just waiting for it.
There's no one better at the off mic talking than Triple H.
Yeah.
Like when he's just like trying to have that conversation to let you to get a point across, like, hey, man, we're still buddies, whatever he's saying. He could be saying like Latin. I don't know. It's very, very believable.
Well, I will say this much. One, and it's funny to me because we're talking so much about last night and neither of us have really talked about John Cena. And one of the most interesting moments for me was there was a moment where he hopped into the match and it just felt completely off. Like nothing made sense all of a sudden. It was like, wait, why is John Cena here? And I don't mean that in a way of like, oh yeah, he clearly showed up last minute to do this. I just mean that it's as if he doesn't fit into that world anymore. He Triple H came out. Triple H looked like a beast. Like Triple H looks so good. His whole look right now with the beard and the shaved head and the leather, like he's just figured out a way, like who am I as a 50-year-old wrestler? Like what is my character? And he's just nailing it. Like I left last night wanting a lot more Triple H. I want Triple H back for a while because I think it's good for business, literally. But I didn't feel the same about Cena. It just felt hokey. I was like, why is it like it just doesn't match anything else that's going on. It just felt like cheesy. And, you know, he's so fucking goofball anyway. I was just really kind of blown away by that moment and sort of also struck with how much I loved seeing Triple H in the ring again.
It's yes, I totally agree. Totally agree. It's rare that it's rare that you have a situation like with John Cena where it was so transparently like in case of emergency break glass setup for his appearance, and that they gave us absolutely nothing to disabuse us of that notion.
Yeah.
There were no Cena video packages on SmackDown leading up to it. You know, there was absolutely nothing. It was clear they just shotgunned AJ into that match because of whatever reason, and they needed to fill the spot. It was John Cena. John Cena shows up on Sunday night, doesn't even bother wearing a SmackDown t-shirt. I guess they got fluorescent green shirts to sell again, and did nothing in the match. I mean, nothing of, you know, there was no storyline that mattered at all.
No, nothing.
My most memorable John Cena moment was when they did the whole team suplex of Braun Strowman through the announce table, which also didn't end up mattering. that everybody else was like exhausted and John Cena was like celebrating like the 12th man on like the Duke basketball team after they put him through, just like jumping around, fist pumping.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Who does that? I don't know.
Well, here's my question. Do we see Triple H tonight? We see Triple H tonight, right? I mean, Stephanie's going to have to like punish Braun. Like there's going to have to be a whole sort of situation there. I don't know. We'll see.
We will see. I mean, somebody, who was it? I think it was Edge on the Edge and Christian podcast had a really interesting take a few weeks ago about AJ winning the title, that they did it. His theory was not, he didn't say this was the reason, but one reason could have been that they did it because, USA's new show Damnation was debuting after SmackDown, so they did it on the UK show. They leaked, so everybody watched it, and that would help. That would help that show. Now, who knows if that's true or not? But
that's some that's like next level deep conspiracy.
Well, they've definitely. I mean, and his background was like that. I mean, his backup for it was that he's been there, a part of them doing it before. That they showed up for, you know, I think it was one of the big anniversary episode of Raw where they like promoted all these people, and it was, you know, USA was debuted the shooter right afterwards, and they were constantly in talks about goosing the ratings, basically.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's. I guess I only bring that up to say. I think we are, you know, formally in this super long WrestleMania season at this point, and that we will be seeing, you know, Triple H and Stephanie a good bit going forward because the USA Network loves them and thinks that they're, you know, a big ratings draw.
Yeah. I mean, I can't disagree with that. I do think that having Triple H around is, I marked out for it hard. I've been seeing all the photos of him, you know, in like with him with the Shield and all the other matches in the UK tour. And I was just like, okay, like I can use some Triple H right now.
Yeah. Everyone knows I'm too big of a Triple H mark. Speaking of Triple H fans, or at least Triple H scholars, Max Landis had a great, Twitter rant, last night, I guess, about Triple H. You know, he did that Wrestling Isn't Wrestling video forever ago that was really, really good. Yeah. And it focused on Triple H's character, like over his entire career. And then he kind of came back to it and said that both on like the surface, like in ring, and on the meta level, he's the most consistently booked character or written, you know, consistently written and longest running character in television history. And how, he's the Cersei Lannister of WWE, and it's pretty incredible that he like managed to sort of like put himself over and destroy young wrestlers. Like he fully embodied the concept of, you know, the popular concept of Triple H, but also the character, which is really, really cool.
Yeah.
Take a look at that. If you haven't been perusing Max Landis's Twitter stream.
I mean, definitely. I try to avoid it at all costs, but, I did love the video. I thought the video was really well done. And I sort of make sure anybody who doesn't ever watch wrestling, I'm like, you should watch this video. Cause it's a great sort of like breakdown of when it's done right.
Yeah, totally true.
Yeah.
And there's a good, you know, Wrestling Isn't Wrestling is just a sort of like tongue in cheek title, but it's totally true on a night like Survivor Series when, as I've written before, the entire show is built around stare downs that you never thought you would see. It has very little to do with wrestling, you know? It's just, holy shit, these guys are in the ring together. Or these ladies. Let's backtrack through, let's start back at the beginning, and we'll end with AJ versus Lesnar.
I want to say one more thing real quick about Triple H. There's a lot of knocks that you can put on the guy, right? And you can say that he's sort of like buried a lot of people in his life. But when the moment came last night and he had the running power slam and the crowd started chanting one more time, there's no doubt in my mind when you watch that Triple H heard that chant and finds a way to get himself back up to get a second running power slam. Like he knew what he was doing. There was no doubt when you see it, because he gets up and does one of those like goofy, like, where am I moments, you know? But it was literally because the crowd wanted it, and he knows that. And he knows that for the story that they're trying to tell, that's how you get it done. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. He's a smart guy. Cerebral assassin, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And he stumbled to his feet, much more convincingly than John Cena did after he ate the coup de grace, and then somehow that like propelled him up to eat another angle slam. I'm still working out the physics on that one.
Yeah.
I want to make sure we hit everything before we come back to the end.
Okay.
Or at least all the important stuff. The New Day versus the Shield, I thought it was a really, really great match.
Yeah, it was great.
Obviously, the Shield won this. Obviously, that was everybody's expectation going in. What was your takeaway from this match?
I thought it was a great way to start the show. I mean, the thing about those two factions coming together is there's nothing real at stake. I mean, there's no belts involved. And even the entire evening, there were no belts involved. So it's mostly just like, here's our three good, you know, top guys. And here's our three top guys. But as a tandem, those groups, they worked together really well, I thought. And they hit all the right spots. They sort of got the crowd going early on. It was like the perfect way to start that show. It gives those people who tune in early something to watch. And then it also sets the plate for those of us who are going to watch for the entire show. So I thought they nailed it.
Yeah, I thought so too. I mean, this was... I mean, just by virtue of the fact that it was the last match that they sort of threw together, this was a little bit of just like a, you know, it was going to be more form than substance, you know. It was just sort of symbolic of the whole night. But this also was in a lot of ways a dream match, you know. I mean, it was harkened back to those early days of the Shield and the Wyatt family squaring off. You know, I like to see these factions, but and that, I mean, listen, it was a great match. It was a lot of fun. It was really well constructed, and the New Day managed to come out looking, you know, good by losing. And the whole thing I thought was smartly put together for what it was.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think it a little bit set me, and this is what set me up with a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth for the whole show, just because this was the real opportunity, right? I mean, this was the it was with the Shield winning, it was really hard to move the needle on either of these things at all. And that's fine. It's the safe pick. And the Shield presumably has, you know, is kind of has somewhere to go. But I don't know that the Shield would have looked bad if they'd lost. And I said this on the last show, the New Day was the one team in all of these matches that, or the one competitor in all of these matches that could have really shocked the world by winning. You know, this would have been the big, like, holy shit, the New Day is big. If the New Day went over on the Shield, that's a huge moment, you know, for them.
That's a tricky one for me because I'm with you. I don't know that either team really gets hurt from losing that match because, again, there was nothing real at stake. And they're not even on the same, you know, they're not on the same brand. So we're not going to see that again. But it does feel, I guess maybe it's just momentum. Like New Day's been around really sort of killing it the last, you know, 2 years, that if the Shield, who's just now trying to get sort of going again, if they would have lost a New Day, it might sort of weaken them moving forward a bit. But I don't know. The personalities in each one of those factions are just so strong that it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to see much damaging them. You know, you'd have to get them like, you know, beat up by jobbers every week for us to start to take them, you know, not serious in any way.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, I just think that this just set the tone for WWE playing it safe for the whole night.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Women's Survivor Series match. Yeah, you mentioned before that you know, it felt a little bit undercooked, and I agree. It was 18 and a half minutes long. It was the second longest, or the third longest, I guess, match on the card, but it felt like it was about 8.5 minutes long.
Was it really? It was 18 and a half minutes long, huh?
That's according to Wikipedia. And you know,
it felt
never
so
wrong.
Short to me. I don't know why that is.
I think just the big moments of the match were all sort of seemed a little bit abbreviated, which is strange, you know, like Asuka got her big moment, but it didn't quite seem as big as possible. I mean, I feel like the biggest moment of, and I'm misremembering, I've been on NyQuil all week, but the Nia Jax Tamina face-off was weirdly booked to be like the biggest moment of the match. I mean, or one of the biggest moments. And that was, you know, just a little bit of it's one of those lies that WWE tells, you know, in the middle of a match.
Yeah.
But, although Tamina did look good. So, I mean, it was fine. You know, I thought that I almost feel like they would have been better off just only telling one story because they certainly weren't.
Well, that was my feeling going in, is like, just tell me the Asuka story right now, because I know stories about everybody else. I know where everybody else stands in those matches. But like, tell me the Asuka story, because she's the wild card now. She's the new one for me. And you're building her up to be this like unstoppable beast, which she rightfully should be. So then, you know, make it a 5-on-1, because that's, by the way, people think that way, but they never think it's actually going to happen. So if you actually do that once and like have it be a 5-on-1 Survivor Series match where the one comes back and beats the five, like it's the crowd would have gone crazy for that. Like they would have gone crazy for that, but it just wasn't meant to be. I don't know.
I'm usually not one to harp on like old fashioned booking principles.
Yeah.
But I do think it was a little bit of a weird look to have her, in like the Stephanie McMahon pep talk, backstage video earlier and then, or before this match, just to have her sort of rah-rahing as part of the team. And, you know, I mean, I guess it makes sense to have her. She was there on Saturday, right? Giving like, she like gave Ember Moon the title belt.
Yeah. She was there for that. Yeah.
Those are just two really weird character decisions for her. And I don't think that the Saturday night thing was a bad decision, but it's just two very different looks to Asuka, and to have them to happen in the same weekend when they're trying to establish her as a very specific sort of character on Raw. It all felt just a little bit just off pitch to me.
Well, this is where I always go back to like a Mattel moment. And what I mean by that is like, you have to remember that, like, you know, the upcoming Clash of Champions is sponsored by Mattel. And so they are going to, as much as we want her to be this ruthless killer who goes out and just destroys everybody, like at the end of the day, she still dresses, you know, like a cartoon character, and they're going to want to try to sell her as, you know, this champion and sell some Asuka dolls and sell some, you know, some new Survivor Series limited edition rings with shark cages. And, you know, so it's like there's a part of me that always has to like calm down the mark inside of me and remember that this is a Fortune 500 publicly traded company that is sponsored by Mattel. Like at the end of the day, like they're going to want Asuka cheerleading backstage with the rest of the group and all of their Raw t-shirts. I mean, it's just, it's going to happen that way. Well, what we can hope for is that we get a mix of the two worlds.
But this t-shirt thing, I mean, I'm going to come back to it one more time.
Okay.
I'll give you marketing on any other moment. And I get it. It's for the kids and whatever else. But like, if you're going to like, put them in t-shirts that people will actually buy, so we each understand that it's a cheap marketing ploy.
Right.
No one's, were they even selling branded Raw and SmackDown t-shirts in Houston?
I don't think so. I think that's the craziest part of
it. Is there any fan that has brand loyalty? I mean, there's, you know, there's like 500 smart marks who just insist that SmackDown's a better show and refuse to watch Raw. But I don't think but honestly, nobody cares.
No. And
literally nobody cares. How is this confused? Here it is. If you care enough about wrestling to care that they're wearing different t-shirts, that there is a brand loyalty angle going on, you don't need the t-shirts to be able to tell apart who's on what show.
Right.
Right.
I agree.
So it's just, it all seems so dumb. I just don't get it.
Also, if you're going to do it, like, let's just go ahead and accept that they're going to do that. They're going to be colored t-shirts. Then why not do like what the NBA does and like do a different one every year for Survivor Series? Like what's the look going to be this year? Like what's the team sort of jersey going to be this year? But no, it's just those like fucking generic, like red and blue, terrible, like ends up in a thrift store, like brand t-shirts.
Yes. It looks like they got a bunch of these t-shirts made 15 years ago. I know they've changed the logo since then, but like, it looks like they just accidentally overprinted by 10 times more than they needed. And they just, that's the reason they have to drag them out every year until they like run out of them.
Yeah.
And it's funny because my old pitch for the NBA that I've, you know, told my coworkers way too many times over the years is that they should just all wear their actual uniforms, but just in different, like every, like one team that's like the black version of those uniforms and their team wears the white version of their regular uniforms. And even if WWE did that, just everybody has the red or blue version of their regular merch that day.
Yeah.
Like they sell Christmas colored Finn Balor t-shirts on the, you know, WWE shop right now.
Yeah. I mean, they sort of
like
did,
that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. Like Finn Balor's like, ring attire was all red. You know, so like, I'm with you on that. Like, I don't need the brand logo splashed across a t-shirt. Like, just have everybody in red. Like, Triple H wore his own merch in a red color. I think Nakamura came out in blue and black instead of his normal red and black. So like, you know, I'm all down for that idea. But boy, they just love those red and blue t-shirts.
And listen, in kayfabe, if you're Shane McMahon or Kurt Angle and you want to win so badly, and your job is riding on it, in the case of Kurt Angle, why would you want dudes wearing things they don't normally wrestle in? Why would you want to make anything different so that they would possibly lose the match? You know, they have one degree of something else to overcome. Anyway, I'm done ranting about this.
Yeah.
All right, Baron Corbin defeated The Miz. I don't have anything to say about this.
I don't either.
All right, let's move on. The Usos defeated Cesaro and Sheamus. I actually kind of like this match, but obviously Cesaro and Sheamus, as great as they are, you know, changed the complexion of the match a little bit. It felt a little bit more like a functional, like a cog in the show. But I thought everybody looked really good. The Usos looked great.
Well, it was I was planning on it being my take the dogs down for a walk match. And it started and I sort of like half watched it as I held the dog leashes in hands. And then before I knew it, like the match was over and I was like completely into it. And I was like, oh man, damn it. The Usos, you got me. Yeah. I am not the biggest Usos fan in the world. I mean, I like this version of the Usos better than I used to like the old face paint and colorful version.
Sure.
But still, I was just like, neither of those two teams appeal to me. And I just thought I wouldn't like the match, but it was actually pretty enjoyable overall, I thought.
Yeah, man. I thought they were great. The Usos aren't even changing anything. I just enjoy them and I feel like I like them better all the time.
Yeah.
And I've liked them from the moment they kind of like switched this angle. So that's saying something, that there's room for them to grow.
Yeah.
Charlotte Flair versus Alexa Bliss, champion versus champion match. I mean, this might have been my favorite match on the card.
Oh yeah.
I thought it was really good.
I thought it was really good. I thought it was an interesting pairing of two people that just worked somehow. Like they just, even though the size difference is so great between the two of them and you have to suspend your disbelief for the entire match, they both really executed well, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, there was some suspension of disbelief, although it didn't feel like as glaring as I was concerned it would be. I mean, they worked it. They did the Charlotte hurts her ribs angle early in the match, and they kind of kept coming back around to that. But there was a lot of I'm not going to say this the right way. The work rate felt very indie wrestling to me, and not work rate, but the match style felt very indie wrestling to me in a way that like. It very rarely happens for the entire match.
Yeah, I get
that.
I mean,
this is, I'm not saying it was like, this isn't like Sami Zayn Nakamura or something like that, but there was something about the way that they were suspending disbelief that they were, I mean, it was just, and just the style was just, I don't know, it was just a little bit more high pace, a little bit more fanciful in a lot of ways. It's hard to put my finger on. I want to go rewatch it today before I, you know, crown this like the pinnacle of the indie takeover in WWE. But there was just a little bit more. I don't know, like suspension of disbelief was just sort of out the window and the style felt like they were integrating a more wide ranging style into the match. I really enjoyed it. I thought that both Charlotte and Alexa were just, I mean, at their peaks, you know, I mean, it was a really cool match.
Alexa Bliss to me, it is so unique in so many ways, but in one way that I find her to be like completely unique is she's so tiny when you see her against anyone else in the women's division. She's so tiny, but I never once believed that she's not tough. I never once believed that she can't hold her own with anybody in any match. Even like with Nia Jax, you know, it's like, I believe there's a world in which Alexa Bliss can beat Nia Jax and like, and win clean. You know, she's just like, she's got that thing that she can be so petty and so, you know, like once like, you know, the little yappy dog, you know, that sort of barks too loud, but can't back up their bark. But she never once falls and doesn't meet that level. She's like constantly competing with the toughest people and holding her own. And that's a testament to her and knowing how to sort of like tell that story. And she's just very good at it. She's really, really
she's very good.
Good
at it. And you're right about that. I mean, she has, there's never going to be, I've talked about this kind of stuff forever with, you know, undersized wrestlers. I'm never going to figure out what the exact equation is, but there's definitely a difference between being like short and being miniature, you know, what I've said in the past is it's okay to be short. It's okay to be like Daniel Bryan when it just looks like if your neck were regular sized, you might be taller or whatever. And just to be short and stocky is totally fine. Now she's obviously not stocky, but there's just a solidity to her. Like when she missed the Twisted Bliss, on Sunday night, she just sort of bounced like one of those like crash test, no, not a crash test dummy, like one of those, like those MMA, like dummies that you practice with that are just one solid block of flesh or whatever. Like she bounces like she's made out of one solid thing and her arms aren't going in a million different directions because she has substance, like literal substance to her body.
Yeah. She's strong.
And I think that you're right. I mean, it was, she's really great and she doesn't have to oversell the kind of weaselly weak heel thing to make that sort to make her believable.
No, you know?
I mean, it's
there's a world where I would love to see that match again, like at WrestleMania. But
well, I don't think it's out of the picture that we'll be seeing that match again for like reunite. I mean, for uniting the two women's titles, because that's just the way wrestling works.
Yeah.
You know, they're constantly separating and putting them back together. And I think that we have, you know, I mean, there's a lot of talented women in WWE right now. We talked about NXT, and there's a handful of wrestlers from that were in the Mae Young Classic that are clearly going to be stars that haven't even gotten a sniff in NXT yet.
Yeah.
I you know, the women's wrestling overall is really, really great. And I say that, you know, all as a means to get to the point where like, these are clearly the top two women working in WWE today. With, you know, a couple close behind, but you know, we may be back here someday.
Yeah.
And, you know, I it wouldn't surprise me. This certainly had a big match feel, and I don't know why, but a big match feel like this and the champion versus champion match on the men's side were the two, you know, kind of biggest, like I kind of catch myself holding my breath moments,
yeah.
You know, during the entrances. So anyway, let's move on to that match. Brock Lesnar versus AJ Styles. I mean, listen, this match was 15 minutes and 25 seconds, according to Wikipedia. So that right there is a success in the Brock Lesnar era to pull a match out that far. I just thought this was beautiful. I mean, this match was a thing of beauty. I don't care that AJ was lost. I didn't have a moment where I thought he might win at any point during the run up to this show. And it was just, the match itself was just really, really great.
Here's my thing. I thought there was a world in which AJ could win, only because in the last few weeks, the last month, I think he has really shown himself to be the MVP of both brands at this point. I mean, he's just the guy. I said this the last time I was on the podcast. He's the guy that the minute you step into the ring with him, you're guaranteed a good match. Now, you have the possibility of having a great match, and you have an even bigger possibility of it being one of the greatest matches if you hold your own. But just getting in the ring with the guy guarantees you a good match. And so I thought maybe there's a world in which he wins. Here's my biggest problem with Survivor Series, one of my biggest problems of last night. The way that the match count kept going, and when I got to a point where it was 3-2 and the Lesnar AJ match was coming up, and I know for a fact that Raw's going to win the 5-on-5, then I know that Lesnar's winning that match, because they're not going to decide that Raw's the winner before the main match at the end. That's a small complaint, but it's a complaint nonetheless. But when the match first started off and it seems like we're going to get a complete squash out of it, there's no way you're going to have that happen to your top guy. I mean, AJ Styles, like I said, is the MVP. So I was waiting and waiting and waiting. How are they going to tell this story? And when he started to fight back, I don't know that I've been more invested in a match in the last like 10 years. I was just like so in it and so holding onto this hope that, oh my God, he's going to win this match. Like, he's going to win this match.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the power of the F5 continues to be the most powerful move in the history of wrestling. I could have dealt with AJ getting at least two F5s. You know, Lesnar took a few phenomenal forearms. I thought 450. I mean, I just thought we could have made AJ look a little stronger if he would have kicked out of an F5. But, you know, what are you going to do? It's Brock Lesnar at the end of the day.
That was my only note, or just when in real time watching it, I was like, Brock should just give him the courtesy of pulling him up by his hair and hitting him with a second one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like he earned it. You earned a second one.
Yeah. But I thought, yeah, I mean, and don't get me wrong. I didn't have any moment of thinking AJ would win. I was there in the moment in the match too. Like I thought that it was a real possibility. So or at least emotionally I did. I don't know if logically I did, but that's the sign of a great match, you know? And I wrote a little piece before the show about all the crazy changes that, you know, the build to the Survivor Series started with Jinder Mahal calling out Brock Lesnar. You know, that was the first thing that happened about Survivor Series. And he wasn't even on the show. We all know, you know, that whole, the wackiness of that story. But, you know, I ended it saying, I don't understand what's going on with the show. And so weirdly, that's allowing me to enjoy it like a kid. Like I'm watching, you know, the first Survivor Series 30 years ago, you know, you're just like, give yourself over to it. And it doesn't fully happen, but I was so invested in this match and it just had me. I mean, it was really, really well done. Takeaways from that. We got to get out of here. But takeaways from, there's people knocking on the door in the studio here, but takeaways from the big Survivor Series match. Where do you think we're going to be tonight? And where do you think we're going to be at, the Clash of the Champions, the next pay-per-view, the SmackDown show in a few weeks?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, as far as tonight goes, I'm really looking forward to seeing what the story is with Braun Strowman moving forward. You know, are we going to set up a Triple H Braun Strowman for Royal Rumble just to get him back into shape before WrestleMania? Like, what are we going to do there? Like, what kind of world are we living in over in Raw now that they're the champion, but they're the champion with some controversy at the top of the roster? I'm like super stoked for where we're going with Finn Balor, Samoa Joe. I think that's like probably like my favorite sort of under the radar pairing coming up.
Sure.
SmackDown to me, there's so many more questions about like what's the direction they're heading over there. You know, what do we get from Owens and Zayn coming up, like you said, at Clash of Champions? Like, you know, what's this storyline going to be? And I guess in that way, Survivor Series did its job, right? It's like, I don't really know where we're going for either of these brands now. And so I think part of like tuning in tonight for me is going to be like the excitement I have about tuning in tonight is to see where we're going. And that's how they do their job the right way.
I mean, it is. I mean, I've complained about my workflow on many podcasts over the years. You know, traditionally I write about, you know, when I've written pay-per-view recaps, I have to wait for Raw to be done. Now in the brand split era, you sort of, if it's a SmackDown show, you got to wait till, you know, after Tuesday night to write anything going forward. So it just sort of the cycle works for viewership the same way. It's just a sort of interminable wheel. And, you know, that's why we have giant pay-per-views like the Survivor Series where nothing really seems to happen because it can't ever end.
Right.
I think that the SmackDown side is a little bit more clear cut. I mean, we have this pay-per-view is in just under a month, Clash of Champions, and it's going to be, you know, all of the matches that we already, it's going to be, you know, AJ versus Jinder in the rematch. I'm sure, you know, it's going to be just all of the rematches plus Shane McMahon versus, you know, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in some form or fashion.
I thought it was really telling that we didn't see Jinder Mahal last night at all, except for a video package. There's something there's just something really off about all of this. I'm not sure what it is yet, but like just something's up. I don't know. I smell a rat somewhere.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it could be something as simple as like, you know, there was only one person who was insisting on Jinder Mahal, if that person suddenly changed their mind, it could change a whole lot of things.
But is it that obvious that they would try to put a belt on somebody just to sell a network in India? And then as soon as like they realized that it wasn't selling in India, they just like jerked the belt off of him. Like that seems crazy to me. Cause as much as you know me, I'm a Jinder Mahal like hater. I was not aboard ever. I'm still not aboard, but that just seems really cruel to me to a guy who like for the most part is a pretty decent heel. You know, he like
totally
understands
agree.
How to be a heel. It just seems, I don't know. It just seemed like really sort of uncomfortable to me. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, Tuesday.
I was going to say, we'll see what happens on Tuesday.
That's got to be like the Jinder Mahal Reclamation Project begins. I mean, his little one-off appearance backstage last week was just sort of embarrassingly brief. And yeah, I thought the whole thing was very strange.
Yeah.
We'll see more. I guess we'll know more going forward. John Cena, are we going to see him on Tuesday or?
Fuck no.
Yeah.
I guarantee you he's in Los Angeles with me right now trying to like get on some show.
Oh man, that was harsh. And
it's true,
yeah, so but I totally agree. I hope Triple H is around tonight. I'm looking forward to see what we'll do with that going forward. And now, you know, we can start counting down the days until Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, if that happens, or you know, Braun Strowman is, you know, Hulk Hogan 2.0 by then. I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, and like I wasn't. I think the takeaway here is Survivor Series was, I think, too exciting. There were some good moments. There were some better moments at NXT the night before.
Yeah.
But you know, long slog to WrestleMania has begun, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah.
Well, that was a really down note to start to end this whole thing.
Yeah, way to go. Way to go, Shoemaker. Way to really tease us for the next pod.
Well, apologies to everybody listening to this for how down we are. Apologies to Dean Ambrose, as always. This is the Masked Man Show. It's part of the Ringer Podcast Network. We'll see you back here next week, humanoid.
Tony Schiavone here on the Masked Man Show. We are desperately out of time. The tape machines are rolling. We'll see you next week on the Masked Man Show.